you, everybody, for joining in on Soy Chingona. I am your host, E. Marie, and today we are doing episode 3, and we are talking about racist kids. Today I have a very special guest who's a very good friend of mine, Lily, who, thank you, Lily, so much for with me today. And I'm going to let Lily start off of why she's here today to share a story, and then we'll have a little discussion after it and see where it goes from there. So, Lily, feel free to take over and tell us why I brought you on the show.
Okay, so you brought me on the show to discuss racist kids. Racist kids is a little strong. I'm going to start off with that. But the experience that I, you know, gave to you off the air, obviously, was an experience that I had with my daughter. My daughter is a mixed child. She's Black Honduran and, of course, Mexican through me. She's a little bit of a, you know, darker complexion child, curly head of hair. Big curly head of hair. And when we first moved back from New York, because, you know, I was living in New York when she was born, we had to stay for a minute with my mom at her house in San Isidro. She did her kindergarten school year in San Isidro. And because most kids in schools in San Isidro are, you know, children who all look very similar, Mexican children, similar complexions, stick straight hair, my kid was the oddball out. I think my kid was one of maybe two or three kids who were mixed at her school. There was no straight Black children at all.
For our listeners, too, just to let you know, for those of you who don't live in San Diego or know San Diego area, San Isidro is the town, the first town that borders the Mexican border from the U.S. That's the first town you enter when you're going in, so just to give you a little background
on that. A little context. So, Allie being a kindergartner, going into kindergarten, she was 5 years old, and I was thinking, like, oh, this will be fine. Like, I was a little hesitant to have her go to school in that community because, you know, she looks different. But I was like, all right, their kids aren't born with prejudice, you know? They're usually taught that. And I, as a mother of one child, you know, newly experiencing all of this stuff, thought, oh, you know, five-year-olds don't have prejudices yet. But as it turned out, my kid experienced a whole lot of prejudice and, you know, I guess, for lack of a better word, some racism at her school at 5 years old, where kids would tell her her hair was ugly because it was curly, or she didn't shower because her skin was darker than her, or any number of things. So,
and obviously you had this concern before you even brought her into school. So it is something that you thought of. Why do you think you thought about that as a parent?
Well, because as a parent, I feel like, well, first of all, I, you know, had a child with a Black person, a Black man. And I think that a lot of people don't weigh what that means. A lot of women who are not Black, who go and have children with Black men, or, you know, vice versa, men who have children with Black women, don't weigh what that means to the world. Like, obviously, you know, with the climate and what we see in a daily, you know, everything that's happened with, like, police killing Black people all over the place and all of that kind of stuff, I think that we know that there are microaggressions towards Black people as it is in general. You know what I mean? There's a whole lot of, you know, there's still a lot of racist people out there. And right now, with this orange Cheeto number 45 being in office, we know that people are out here getting extra bold and extra brave and thinking they can say things to people of color.
They feel validated.
They feel validated to say these off-the-wall things to people of color that they would never dream of saying to people out loud before. So that was something I was always very conscious of. I am having a child who is Black. Yes, she's Mexican too, but the world sees my kid as a Black little girl.
Right.
She is a beautiful Black little girl.
Absolutely.
But people outside of, you know, the environment will always see her as a Black little girl, which means she will grow up to be a Black woman, which means she will be dealing with things that even me as a Latina that, you know, has dealt with her own prejudices will not understand because I've never been a Black woman.
Right.
So I feel like I've always been one of those parents, like, who understood from jump, like, I have to learn how to take care of her hair. I have to learn, you know, and I take a lot of pride with that. I do not let her go.
I know you do.
I don't let her, because it bothers me like crazy when I go outside and I see mixed children, let's be honest, mixed children who are out there with their hair looking crazy, and it's because their white mama doesn't know how to take care of their hair and has not taken the time to learn how to do it. Right. You know what I mean? So from jump, that was one of the things that I felt I had to do. Take care of this little girl's hair. She is not allowed to go outside looking crazy at all, you know?
I refuse.
I swear I spend more on hair products for her than I've ever spent on myself in my life, because I want her hair to look, you know, good. I don't want anybody being able to say, like, oh, your mama is not black and she don't know how to do your hair. So, you know, I've always been very aware of what it meant to have a child who was going to be black. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's part of the reason why I thought about things with the school, like, how are kids going to treat her if she's in a school that's predominantly Mexican children? And I'm talking about traditional Mexican children, because as we know, if you go deep into Mexico, there's Afro-Mexicans, you know, right. what I mean, who do look right. black. But in a community such as San Diego, let's be honest, we don't have a lot of Afro-Latinos here. We have a few. I know a few of them, but we don't have a lot of them. And most of the Latinos in San Diego are, you know, closer to European looking. They're lighter complexion, straight hair, or very low textured hair. You know what I mean? So I was very concerned with Allie going to a school and sticking out like a sore thumb. So.
Right. And I can definitely second on that, because I went to school in San Ysidro. Right. And I did not look like the other Mexican girls yes. that I went to school with at all. To them, I looked more American. Mm-hmm. I was not taught Spanish in the home, even though mm-hmm. both my parents spoke Spanish. So as soon as they found out I didn't speak Spanish, that was a whole nother world.
Right.
But there was this separation of just tone of our color of the right. skin, you know, that we were. It was like we were separated by light skin to dark skin, oh, yeah. just being Mexicans in school.
Colorism is real.
And it drove me insane just being a kid. I already knew I was being picked on because of these things. So right. I had that experience of going home crying to my parents all the time. Mm-hmm. I had little girls beat me up and steal my shoes because they were from JCPenney's. That was so bougie back then, right? They weren't Payless. So, right. you know, I got treated a lot like that too. Mm-hmm. So it made me grow up with a lot of bad stigma towards Mexicanos mm-hmm. because I was treated that way by my own people.
Right.
So what did Allie, how was her experience while she was in the school?
Well, I mean, first of all, like I said, she dealt with a lot of children, you know, saying very mean things to her. Like, I don't like using the word bullying with her because I don't want her to feel victimized. Okay. So yeah. I always tell her, you know, I mean, me and Jay always have told her, like, it's other kids are mean to you because they don't understand you, and you are different. Like, different is threatening. So mm-hmm. we like to kind of empower her and embolden her to know that just because she is different, you know, people are gonna probably be crazy towards her, but she needs to, you know, embrace it and own it. So she did experience a whole lot of, like I said, kids being mean to her about her hair, saying she was dirty because her complexion was darker than everybody. Wow. Like, all sorts of things you weren't expecting a five-year-old to deal with. And
again, we're talking about kindergartners.
These are kindergartners. Like, what are they talking about? I mean, and although Allie did come home upset about it and used to say, like, I hate this school, I don't want to go to this school anymore. I mean, you know my kid. My kid is very, like, she is a diva.
She's fearless.
She's a sassy little girl. She yes. is a sassy little girl, and she has the attitude to go for it. So, you know, when kids used to say to her stuff like, oh, you know, or she came home sad and would tell me, Mom, these kids were mean to me about my hair. And I'd be like, well, what did you say to them, kid? Like, what was the thing?
What was your response?
And she's like, well, it does make me sad, but I said to the kid that they're just hating because they got basic hair. So, like, she always has.
I love your child.
You always have some sort of basic reply, you know? And there was even this one incident where this kid, once again, kindergartners, said something to her that was mean, and she had this sassy little response. So the kid said, fuck you, to her.
Whoa.
A kindergartner. Right.
What did she say?
And I said, well, Allie, what did you say? She's like, well, Mom, he said fuck you to me. So I said fuck you back. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, you're six, or, I mean, still at the time, five. You can't say that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So we had to have a conversation about, you know, cursing and being appropriate and, you know.
That fine line between teaching your child how to stick up for themselves, right, and having the confidence to do, mm-hmm, that, but then also know that there's a line that they can't,
right,
cross.
Like, that's, you still got to keep things appropriate, act, kid. Yeah, like, you're not 16, you're six. You know? But yeah, she did experience a whole lot of negativity, and because of that, like, we made a conscious effort to move into a more diverse neighborhood, and now we're in City Heights, which, mm-hmm, is, you know, pretty much central San Diego, and the school that she goes to has children from all over the place. You know, her best friend now is this little girl. Her name is Baracko. She is Somalian and she's Muslim. So, you know, there's the different religion, different, mm-hmm, ethnicity, different background.
Diverse.
It's a very diverse school, and there are no two kids in her, even in her class. I mean, she's going to be in a different class because she starts school again Monday, but no two kids that looked, you know, like clones of each other. So the entire school, like, is a melting pot, and I love it. And because of it, Allie has been a lot more comfortable at school this year. Like, you can't tell her that, you know, anything anymore. She's like, I love my school, I love my teachers, I love my friends, I miss everybody, I love everybody. And Allie's one of those types of kids, like, she loves everybody, and everybody loves Allie. So,
which I'm sure, being in a school like that, coming from San Ysidro, that must have killed her at,
oh, yeah,
like, her personality. She's, yeah, five, she's just growing, her first, right, time in school, and she already has a personality of wanting to connect with everyone, mm-hmm, around her, and not have that connection back must,
right,
have just hurt her ego being, oh, yeah, a little five-year-old, because I've seen her go through that. And then when you moved her and you brought her into work right after she started her new school, mm-hmm, and a coworker of ours asked her how she liked the new school, and the smile on her face,
mm-hmm,
almost brought me and the coworker to tears, because we knew what she had experienced,
right,
and she was a totally different kid walking
different
in
kid.
She was so excited and happy, yeah, about school, which in return, for me, I think, creates an environment where she's able now to focus on her education,
mm-hmm,
and focus on the schooling part of it, and not just all these kids being
picking
mean
on her. Yeah,
she's able to take that in, because I think a lot of times too, when, you know, I was in school and going through all that, my focus was so much on all these kids, mm-hmm, and how they're treating me, and not on what was going on in the classroom,
right,
at all. You know, have, yeah, you seen that in a difference?
I mean, I can't really say I've seen that completely, because Allie has always been a kid that, you know, she's on her shit.
Yeah,
so,
I can see that.
like, this kid started crawling, trying to catch my iPad when I was, you know, she was 7 months old, crawling already because she wanted to get the iPad. Like, she's always been really ahead of the curve. If,
right,
that's a good way to put it, you know,
right,
like, she's quick at picking up reading. She was quick at picking up her alphabet. So I don't say her school suffered yet, but I see how that could have been a potential, you know, as she was getting older, if we would have kept her in that,
right,
environment. So, I mean, she was excelling even in kindergarten, and she was a little ahead of kids her age group. And, you know, this school year she's continued to do great, because, you know, I just feel like that's her personality, but I see how that could have affected her down the line, where this was her main concern, the, you know, dealing with animosity or, excuse me, whatever you want to call it, could have potentially,
right,
burdened her to where she wasn't focused on school and where she was focused on this other stuff.
Now, as a mom, you said, you know, doing certain things to make sure that you were owning certain things that she didn't have, as far as, you know, doing her hair and stuff, and,
mm-hmm,
learning to make sure you knew how to do that. What other things, as a mom, have you taken on that responsibility to show your daughter everything that makes her who she is? Yeah.
So one of the things that we did at home that, you know, I feel like I told you the story before about the whole Elsa and the Disney stuff and the Disney princesses. Like, we all,
yep,
know all these Disney princesses,
right,
up until recently have all been blonde haired, blue eyed, you know, Barbie doll looking, like, you know, little girls or people, whatever they are in the cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
when Allie was, around the time she was born, you know, the whole Frozen movie came out and Elsa and Anna were a big thing. And, you know, no kid knew how to let go of that damn Let It Go song.
I knew the song before I even saw the movie. Right. Okay? And I don't have children.
Right. So Elsa is a very, you know, for those who have not seen who Elsa is, even though I know everybody has, Elsa is a very fair complexioned character,
yes,
with damn near white hair and right, very blue eyes. Mm-hmm. So one time we were at home and Jay's the boyfriend, you know, the significant other, he was trying to show me. He was like, this kid, he's the one who caught it before, he's like, this kid is really stuck on this Disney princess thing, and it's going to breed you know, like, it's not going to teach her to be proud of who she is. She's going to think these other characters, this perception of what is beautiful through Disney, is going to teach her what beauty is. And she's not going to learn to reflect that.
Right.
She is a beautiful little girl, too.
Right.
So he, trying to prove a point, because he's always trying to prove devil's advocate, and he's always trying to, you know, push my buttons in every single direction. He found a picture of Elsa online. I'm sure you can Google it. And it was Elsa painted as a black little girl character.
I did see that. I saw that meme that someone posted. Yeah.
So the character looks very different, obviously.
Right.
And Jay went and showed this image to Allie, and Allie goes, that's not Elsa. That's ugly. And I'm like, well, why is it ugly? And she's like, I still think she's pretty. Why is it ugly? Because her skin is dark and you know, her hair is not this color. And that, to me, kind of hurt me. And then soon after that, like, I hadn't realized that her own perception of her was, you know, she was saying that Elsa looked ugly because she had a darker complexion like her. And I'm like, this is going to build some sort of, you know, like, self-hate type of thing if we don't catch it in time. And soon after that, I remember seeing this video of a study that was done a few years ago, probably longer than a few years ago. And they were showing all these children of color dolls, like baby dolls. And the baby dolls were either black baby dolls or white baby dolls. And all of the kids, even the black kids, Latino kids, Asian kids, were all gravitating towards the white dolls. They, you know, subconsciously thought that because they were white, that they were beautiful.
Right.
The black doll was, they didn't want it because they thought it was ugly. So that to me was like, oh no, we're not doing this. You know what I mean? Like, we have to switch everything up. So I am like extra sometimes when it comes to certain things. Like, I went and threw out all her white Barbies, all her white dolls, all her freaking books that consisted of like white characters. Like, I probably OD'd. I probably didn't need to go that far, but I went and replaced it all with stuff that had reflections of children that looked like her.
I mean, how could you not at that point? And again, I'm not a mother, but what I see is you just witness your daughter look at something and say, this is more beautiful than this because it's lighter than this.
Yes.
And then you look at your daughter and you look at her skin and, you know, she's on the dark spectrum, not on the lighter side. Mm-hmm. That hurt you.
It hurt me a lot.
So, you know, I know that you're like, oh, I may have gone over the top in doing that, but you did that because you were hurt and you didn't want your daughter to grow up not owning how beautiful she is. You know, and I think about taking it to those other levels of looking at things, like when the girls would run for homecoming queen and stuff in school. I would always look at the girls, and I never went and did anything like that because the girls that were all winning, and I was at a different high school, not in San Ysidro anymore, at a white predominant high school. They're all white girls with blonde hair and blue eyes and came from money. And I didn't see any of the girls that look like me trying to run for it. So therefore, I never thought I could be a homecoming queen.
Right.
Well, obviously, that's bullshit. But inside, that's how I felt.
Exactly.
You know, inside, when the first thing I wanted to do when I was growing up is I wanted to be Barbara Walters. I wanted to be a reporter. And back in the late 80s, early 90s, we had the big, huge recorders.
Yes.
We had to, like, when you recorded a camcorder, like, you had bags with you,
absolutely,
of all this equipment. And I would have the neighborhood kids, a couple of the neighbors would come, and each of them had their own like little duty to mm-hmm. do and carry. And I would go around and interview the people in the neighborhood. And I lived in a pretty ghetto neighborhood and stuff. And they're like, oh, great. Here comes Erica down the street, like wanting to talk. And I remember being so upset with my dad because he told me, what do you think? You're Barbara Walters? Mm-hmm. And I said, yes, that's what I want to do. I want to be Barbara Walters. I want to be on TV. Right. I want to interview people and ask them hard questions. And he said, mija, you can't. Barbara Walters is white.
Right.
And what did I do with that dream?
You crushed. Let it go. Yeah.
Crushed. And it never came about until years later of wanting to do something like this, of right. a podcast, and thinking like, oh, there's no reason why I can't do it. Mm-hmm. But imagine if I would have had that encouragement and would have thought mm-hmm. that I could do something like that. I could have went a different direction in life. Absolutely. I could have went to college for something like, you know, media and stuff and communication, journalism. Mm-hmm. But I was told from my father, girl, you're not white. You can't do it.
The person who's supposed to be encouraging you crushes your dream before it's even.
The person who's supposed to tell me to like dream big right. and like go for it is the person being like, no, let's be realistic. Like, don't dream out. Big.
Right.
Put that dream away.
I think that's a thing that a lot of people of color may deal with, like this whole like immigrant mentality. You know, right. where it's like, oh, yes, we're here in America because it's the land of opportunity, but your opportunity can only be this big, you know,
right.
like you can only go this far. And who's to say, like, we all have different narratives and we all, you know, are different people. So we can all go pursue what we want to do. But there's this block that I feel, I mean, things have changed a lot, obviously, recently. But right. I feel like during the era that our parents were around, it was like they were taught like, oh, just graduate high school and get a job. You know, that's it.
At least, absolutely.
At least you're not in Mexico, or at least you're not in Puerto Rico, or at least you're not, you know, making
South America.
Right. making sense on the dollar. You know what I mean? Like making $50 a week. Like at least we're making it, you know. But it's like realistically, you do need a college education now, and you do need to strive to do bigger and better, and it's like we should be teaching our kids that they can do and be whatever they want to be, you know,
right? And that's why I think
they look like
that's why I think those moves that you made mm-hmm. For your daughter were really important. You recognized those things early on. You already had that concern because you were, you know, I don't know what other word to use it, but woke about, I really don't know what other word to use right now for it, but you really were in tune to what's going right. on in the world. So you really did think about those type of things for your daughter, where
right.
I haven't met very many people who have mixed kids that have thought about those mm-hmm. things before their child was even born.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot to think about because then, you know, and I've shared with you, Lily, and talked to you about my nephew and my niece
right.
who, you know, are half white,
mm-hmm.
But they look white.
Mm-hmm.
And so my sisters go through the opposite of what
right.
you're going through. Now they're on another end where they live both in Oregon, Portland and Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
And so their children are going to be raised as white kids because that's what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
So that's so much responsibility on my sisters to make sure that their children, even though they look this way, that they know everything that's about them,
right.
their culture. And like, I know my nephew's very proud of being Mexican, uh-huh. and he'll tell everybody, my grandpa was born in Mexico, and that's why we're Mexican. Like, he's uh-huh. so proud of it, and it's so awesome to see. But at the other end, it's so crazy to already see him being treated a certain way because he's a beautiful little white boy.
Yeah.
And he gets treated so much different than one of my other little cousins who will be the same age and have the same personality and the same charisma and everything.
Right.
But he looks different.
Right.
And when he walks into that job, those people are going to look at those two people completely different.
It's a reality. Because even though, you know, your nephew knows that he's Mexican and white, people are going to see him as a white kid.
Right.
And
just like people are going to see your daughter as a black woman.
A black
and that's
girl.
What they will
yeah.
see. You know, so I know your daughter's still, you know, really young. Obviously, she's only 7 years old.
Right.
But Do you see anything coming from the future, like when she starts getting into junior high and high school, like getting into organizations and stuff? Mm-hmm. Do you think she's going to want to take on everything that she makes her?
Oh, absolutely. Like, yeah. I mean, I feel like I said, the whole me switching all of her toys out and books out, I know it was a little drastic, but I feel like it was the right thing to do because mm-hmm. now you can't tell this little girl nothing. Like, she loves her hair. She loves, like, the bigger the better. You know what I mean?
Oh, she's all about her hair.
The bigger the better. I need to style it this way, style it that way. You know, she's all about it. But now we see her always go towards images of kids that look like her. Like, now yeah. her thing is like, oh, I want to get this doll because she looks like me. Or even the other day we were watching Netflix, and you know how on Netflix you can pick the different profiles and uh-huh. and pick a different yeah. photo. I don't know how she figured out, because again, she's a tech savvy little 7-year-old. Right. She figured out that she can change the profile picture to be like a more customized option. And now all of ours has like these funny little icons, you know, for our Netflix profiles. But her has this image of a little girl who is similar to her complexion and has the curly hair. And we were like, Allie, when did you get that? Why did you pick that one? She's right. like, oh, because she kind of looks like me. I like her. Or she'll be watching, like, Jay likes watching college sports a lot. The other day we were watching, I can't remember where she plays from, but it's this pretty little girl. Obviously not a little girl, but she's a college kid uh-huh. who is a softball player. And me and Jay were like, whoa, if that's Allie in like 10, 15 years, you know, like that's going to be her. Like, she looks just like what Allie will look like. And Allie was like, yeah, she's beautiful because she looks like me. Like, my kid is all sass. This is the kid who, if you go and give her a compliment right now, like, we're trying to teach her about modesty, because people will go up to her all the time and be like, oh my God, you're such a pretty little girl. And she'll give you this, like, sideways, you know, tilt her head sideways smile and be like, I know. And I'm like, stop it. You got to say thank you.
Yeah, like, I had that issue. Like, hey, right now. I will not deny that. Yes, I had some issues with that,
right.
too. And my parents weren't very good mm-hmm. at teaching me to be like, hey, keep it cool yeah, and just say tone thank it down. You. And I'd be like, oh my God, I know, I'm so cute, right?
Right.
Like, oh,
would be horrible. Like, do you like my hair?
Like, I'm like, does it look better this way or this way? Like, who right. is this kid?
So right now we're trying to learn that lesson. Like, modesty is important.
Yeah.
We know you love yourself, but keep it down.
We love that you love yourself.
We love that you love yourself.
A little bit.
Keep loving yourself. But it sounds crazy when you say, I know.
How is the relationship with Allie and her dad's side of the family?
Her dad's side of the family all lives in New York, so it's kind of hard to have them have, you know, yeah. a solid relationship. But, you know, she still keeps in touch. She still calls them, and, you know, I still make sure that, you know, she has some sort of communication with them. Maybe not as often as I'd like, because obviously right. everybody's busy and we're right. on a schedule over here. But I try to be mindful, and, you know, every year I at least, you know, during her birthday time, I take a new photo of her and send it off to all her family. And, you know, Facebook is also a really easy way to do that, because most of the family is on Facebook. So I'm friends with them on Facebook, and I keep in touch with them
Social
through there.
Social media saving a lot of connections with family.
It makes it so much easier. Yeah. So I get to update them through that. And I will say I'm not as good at making sure she calls all the time. But when I do remember, I do. You know, it's just we all have a lot going on. But to me, it was important that, you know, there is an established relationship there, because on my side of the family, obviously, we're all Mexicans, we're all right. Latinos, you know. And to me, it's important that she knows, like, yes, you're Mexican, and yes, you're being brought up in an abundance of Mexican culture, but there's this whole other side of your culture that I need you to know, you know what I mean? And it's not just her being African American, because her grandmother's side of the family, from her dad's side, mm-hmm. She's a black woman. They're from North Carolina, if I remember correctly. But her grandfather on her dad's side, he's a black man, but he's Honduran. So they're Afro-Latinos. Okay. You know, so there's a whole nother...
Another spectrum
to right. that. Like, the Afro-Latino experience to the African-American experience is completely different altogether. And, you know, even on Jay's side of the family, he will say, like, my experience as a black man, because we are, you know... West Indian is completely different than an African American experience. Like, the upbringing is different, and you know, I try to be mindful of all of that. Like, I need you to take in bits and pieces. I know it's a lot to take in, but for me, it's important for her to know an identity. And part of that is also because I feel like when I was growing up, I didn't have a lot of knowing where I came from. You know, my parents would be like, we're Mexican because your grandpa was born in Mexico and your grandma was born in Mexico. But as I've gotten older and went and like did my own digging, I'm like, we are not just Mexican, guys. Like, we are like people. It didn't click to me until I had moved to New York. And you know, to me, here living in San Diego, like, oh, we're Mexican. We're all look alike. People automatically assume I'm Mexican.
Yes.
But when I moved to New York and people, I spent 5 years living in New York when I went to school. People would see me and they'd start speaking to me in Arabic, and I'm like, I'm not Arabic. Like, I don't understand what you're saying. I had this old man yell at me on the subway one time because he was like, you don't speak Arabic. You're ashamed of your heritage. I'm like, sir, I'm Mexican. I speak Spanish. My family, they know I speak Spanish.
You're like, I'm sorry.
But it's just crazy because it led me to see that people think, like, I am a very ambiguous looking woman. Like, I can pass as damn near anything. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So that was a big thing for me. Like, because I didn't know exactly where I came from, and I've slowly discovered that my family has, you know, heritage from all over the place, but because they, you know, met in Mexico, my grandparents met in Mexico and they were raised in Mexico, that we're automatically like, oh, you're just Mexican. I'm like, I get we're Mexican because of where the family was rooted, but what is the ethnic background? You know what I mean? So it's just been very interesting. And like I said, in New York, I was confused as Dominican, Puerto Rican, Nicaraguan, Arabic, Lebanese, like anything and everything under the sun. Like, people have even asked me, like, are you a light-skinned black woman? No, I'm Mexican, but thank you. Like, I get that I'm that ambiguous, but like, you can stick me damn near anywhere and people like automatically assume
that,
like,
that kind of shows like just like the box of what it is out here in San Diego too, because I experienced that too, because I had spent a lot of time on the East Coast, and I remember the first time going out there with my ex-boyfriend and meeting his friends and stuff. Nobody asked me if I was Mexican. That didn't ever come up.
Ever.
It was all these other, they were asking me places I had never even knew of, and I was like, what? I was like, and then I would look at them like, I'm Mexican. And they would trip out because they didn't know a lot of Mexicans. Now, I will say there is a bigger Mexican population that's happening out there that I've noticed over the years.
I think it's been there, but the thing is, the Mexicans that are in, like, that are in the New York area, in the tri-state area, don't look like us. Like, Mexicans that are in New York are, like, the more indigenous
Indian looking, more of the indigenous features. That's how it is in Oregon, because when we were in Oregon, my sisters are still up there, but the Mexicans that are in Oregon are the same thing. They didn't look like us.
Right.
We still got asked in Oregon if we were Lebanese. We used to get asked that all the time. And I couldn't understand why, but it is true. There is, again, like, then you have, go back to like being Mexican, you go back to being, there's so many different types of what we can look like, because I experienced that in my own family too, because we have cousins that look, that have red hair and green eyes and pale skin that live in Tijuana, and then I have cousins who have the Indian features and have the more darker tone, that they're shorter, they have the darker straight hair, like more of the Indian features and stuff. So there is, like, you know, a big thing. You know, it's funny too. Last night, one of my mom's cousins, they live in El Central, and he made a comment about how he pronounced something. So he said, he was talking about beer, and he was talking about Pacifico.
Okay.
And he said something about, like, oh, I'm in San Diego, so I'll say Pacific instead of saying Pacifico. And then, like, and I didn't, okay, so I left the conversation, and then later on when we left, George and I told George, I was like, it's funny because, again, it's like, Mexicans view Mexicans on a totally different scale. They view San Diego Mexicans as these more Americanized Mexicans, but they're in the desert and they view their Mexicans over there different.
Right.
And so it was funny to me when he kind of, it was almost like making a joke, like, we're more whitewashed over here than you are in El Central. It was funny to me. It's my cousin, right. And I'm realizing that. But it was just an interesting thing to walk away from and mm-hmm. be like, there you go, perfect example again. In within my Latino culture, you think you're more Mexican than I am.
Right.
Because what? Because you live in a different area right. than I do? It's
well, there's a whole lot of things that play into the, you know, race and ethnicity thing and even religion, and all of it plays into the prejudices and perceptions and, you know, stereotypes that people may have of other people without, you know, truly understanding one another. So
I will say that growing up too, that my grandmother, my abuelita, watched me and my sister when we were younger, mm-hmm. and she stopped watching us to watch my other cousins. Mm. I don't know if they know this or not, so I know they will be listening to this. my cousins who are half Irish,
okay,
and look Irish, just like my nephew and my niece. Gotcha. They don't look Mexican. My grandmother always favored my other cousins over all of us.
Mm.
She would show them off. Mm-hmm. Friends would come over to see her white grandchildren,
mm-hmm.
and we were forced to go outside and go play and not be around. I remember early on conversations listening to my parents and my tios and my tias, and conversations they would have when my grandmother stopped watching us
mm-hmm.
and took on her white grandchildren and kind of pushed us off to one of her girlfriends that lived by the school. It was, I mean, back then, it was hurtful, but I grew up always having that against right. my abuelita uh-huh. until I got older, and actually we started becoming lighthearted and talking about it uh-huh. and, like, making jokes about it. And, like, now I even tease one of my cousins all the time. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's clear that you're grandma's favorite, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, we all know you are because you look the whitest. Like,
right.
And now we can, you know, kind of make fun of it to make us feel right. a little bit more lighthearted about it. But growing up, I don't think my cousins ever knew
right.
how much that killed us as kids yeah. to know my grandmother rather be around them mm-hmm. than us because they looked white.
Right. And this helps us tie it back to the whole, you know, racist kids or, you know, prejudiced kids, because, you know, kids aren't learning this stuff by themselves. Like, it's right. definitely coming from what they see at home, and it's definitely coming from what they see in their surroundings. So your grandmother may not, you know, she probably had her own perceptions and prejudices, and it's absolutely. A whole different time period. And
immigration,
you know,
coming over here, immigration. Trying to be Americanized.
Yeah, there was a right. whole lot of things going on yes. back then where, you know, they were like, oh, you know, I have white grandchildren. This is great because now, you know, they're going to view
I
us differently.
This other part, or, people are going to look at our family different.
Right. And it's almost like a status thing. Yes. You know what I mean? So because your grandmother was like, okay, let me care and nurture for my lighter, you know, white looking grandkids, but I'm subconsciously pushing away the other ones, then that's teaching all of you guys as kids, like, oh, white is better. And this is like the pace we are setting for the rest of our lives, where, you know, the people who are lighter complexioned and, you know, have more opportunities than us, and, you know, that fear your dad put into you, like, who do you think you're gonna be, Barbara Walters?
Right.
You know, when, you know, truth of the matter is, like, you could have been the Latina version of Barbara Walters, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like we got
I hope you're listening, puppy.
You know, like, that's Oprah came up. I'm sure somebody told her one day, like, yo, you can't do it because you're a black woman, you know. But she pushed through and got to the height that she's at now. And, you know, even when me and Jay started having all of these conversations about Allie, we went through this whole phase like, OK, well, we know about, you know, people in history who did amazing things for the black community, you know, mm-hmm. the different people, Ruby Bridges, you know, Martin Luther King, mm-hmm. Malcolm X, whoever it may be. But he's like, who are these figures for Mexican people? And it took me a long time because his thing is like, who is it besides Selena that you guys look up to? And I was like,
love you, Jay.
And so to this day, we're like, who is it besides Selena that you guys look up to? And he's like, because Selena's been gone for a very long time. And it's the truth, you know?
It is.
Like, we, I feel like it's been in waves where people like idolize Selena all over again. Like she died, you know, what was
we
it?
We had talked about that not too long ago. Right.
So, you know, there's this new wave of people idolizing Selena and kids who weren't even anywhere near conceived when Selena was, you know, popping and
that
alive.
That is what trips me out.
It's crazy. And it's like, it's cool that we're passing that down and that kids are understanding and seeing that part of the culture. But like, what else do we have? You know, besides the Cesar Chavez, like who was an activist,
or
like
people
what?
In entertainment,
right? People in entertainment.
That's what you see: is the people in
the
entertainment.
People in entertainment. So it's really hard for us. Like we, you know, we have a few figures that, you know, like I said, a Cesar Chavez, or you know, there's not too many figures that we see nowadays that we can look up to, and it's like, oh, well. It just means that we have to become those figures for the girls that are coming up in the future, or
exactly.
for the children coming up in the future. Because at the end of the day, I don't know if I don't know because, you know, maybe my parents weren't good at, you know, trying to convey those messages to us, or if it's just because we lack those kinds of figures in our community, you know? Like, we do hear, you know, like I said, Jay always is good with the black community has a whole lot of figures that, you know, were activists that were, you know, leading the way for the culture and, you know, still to this day do. But it's like, I can't think of very many people in the Mexican community who do that. And we try to think about it all the time because we want Ali to have those figures too, you know?
Right. And the figures that I do think about, or because I've done research to find out who these people
are. Right, but you have to dig.
But I didn't grow up knowing about these people either.
Exactly.
And, like, of course, I think Cesar Chavez was probably one of the only ones growing up that I really knew because my dad was so involved in a lot of the protesting. My dad was Brown Berets. He did a lot of that stuff. But even when you said that, too, like, the female, Dolores Huerta.
I didn't know who she was
until I was much older in life. And then I started discovering who this woman was, and she was actually involved in all that same stuff, but not recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And it is more of getting educated and finding these people ourselves. But you're right. It is our responsibility.
Right.
Now we know these things, so it's up to us to make these changes, right, and do better.
Yes.
And I think that's why, you know, with this topic with racist kids, not saying that kids are going out there and deliberately being racist, I wanted to talk about this because I want the adults that are listening to be more aware of the things that they say or things that they feel as an adult right now.
Right.
Because when you shared this story with me, and this was a couple years ago, it made me reflect on what I went through as a kid.
Right.
It made me reflect and go, oh, crap, I went through
similar things
on that. And again, a lot of those things was because of the adults around us talking so freely about things and not thinking that it affected us. Or not thinking you make a comment about a person on TV that looks ugly to you and they're a black person and you're saying how ugly this person is.
Right.
Not realizing that your 5-year-old is
absorbing everything.
Taking that all in and then going to school and seeing a little black girl and going, oh, she's ugly. Mm-hmm. My mom was looking at this black girl on TV last night and said how ugly she was.
Right.
I just want people to be more cautious of what is coming out of their mouths.
Right.
Obviously, that's a huge problem in everything right now. Mm-hmm. But I just want people to think more about those things because, honestly, Lily, you are a person who came into my life and made me think a lot. And in such a good way, though, because you really brought a different side to things for me and made me open up to realize these kind of things. Like, and I did not realize a lot of things that I would say, you know, would come across as, you know, I want to say being racist, but I would say things too, the things that I've heard my parents say and things my grandparents would say. My husband, Puerto Rican, and when he met my grandpa when we were dating, my dad went back like a week later and went to go visit, and my grandpa said, hey, is Mija still with that black guy?
Oh, jeez.
And my papi said, hey, Pops, he's not black. He's Puerto Rican. My grandpa said, it's the same thing, and walked away.
I mean, Puerto Ricans are known to be Afro-Latinos, though. But George, knowing the husband, he is a lot on the lighter side of things. Like, that's confusing, but okay.
Right? So,
but that's how people view us. A lot of people view us as like, well, if you're not white, then you must be black. But
yes,
it's a very ignorant thing to say because there's so many variations and, you know, so many variations of people of color.
Right? And how do you explain that to an 80-year-old man who was raised in a generation that I don't think he even realized how much racism he experienced as a Latino man.
Yeah.
I don't think he realized that.
No. And I think that's the thing with a lot of Latinos and even like Afro-Latinos. There's a lot of, I met a lot of like Dominicans and Puerto Ricans and Hondurans living in New York that were Afro-Latinos, but they were like, I'm not black. And it's like, do you not see yourself? Like, the world sees you as black. Like, embrace that. Love it. You
so
know what I mean?
How come you don't see yourself?
Yeah,
like
but
that?
I think it's just this, like, you know, separation that people want to, like, separate themselves from the whole, you know, perception of what African Americans have gone through, you know, the whole slavery thing, and they want to separate themselves like, oh, we weren't that. And it's
that
like, no,
us.
No, yeah. You weren't. Okay, maybe you weren't part of the whole, you know, slavery and African diaspora thing and all of that, but the world sees you as this. You know what I mean? There's no way around that. No way around it. I have a friend who we tried to have a conversation with. I'm sure, maybe she'll listen to this. But I had been very bothered by her comments. She is one of these women who went and had a child with a black man. Her kid's father was Dominican, but he was a black man.
Okay.
He's Afro-Latino. And she said to us one time, like, oh, I don't want my son to feel sorry for himself. I don't want him growing up with the I'm black mentality. So she had said she didn't want to raise her kid feeling sorry for himself because he was black. And I was like, it's not about him feeling sorry for himself. It's about how the world's going to see him. Because it all came up around the time when the whole Trayvon Martin thing was going on.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the kid got, 14-year-old kid got killed because he was a black kid walking around in a hoodie. And she's like, I don't want to teach him that he can't do certain things or just because he's black. I don't want him to feel sorry for himself. And I was like, I get it. You don't understand. But what you don't see is that even if you want to raise your kid to think he is not black, he is. And the world's going to see him as such. And truth of the matter is, your child is going to have to walk around being worried about, should I be wearing this hoodie up right now? Should I not be wearing this hoodie up right now? What are the police going to do when they stop me? Like, these are things that our children have to worry about because they are black. So it just boggles my mind when people don't think about these things. And like, even, like I said, Latinos who, you know, try to separate themselves from that. Because even though, you know, there's a lot of, like I said, European-looking Latinos who are lighter complexion, lighter hair, who don't try to, you know, who try to assimilate more, like me and Jay love to say, who side with the oppressor, you know, on that extreme end, who side with the oppressor, who try to separate themselves from anything of color. Like, they like, well, I don't have those problems. I'm a light-skinned Latino. Not realizing, like you said, that they're probably dealing with all these sort of microaggressions that they're probably not even catching. Like, oh, you're pretty for a black girl. Or, oh, you don't clean. Or let me tell you, the other day, when was it? On Friday, me, Jay, and our friend Luis, who's also Afro-Latino, we went to a Cuban restaurant. We were eating. We were fine.
I know which restaurant you're at.
You know which one I was at, right? The one over there on Moreno Boulevard.
Uh-huh.
And I went to the bathroom. Everything was fine. We all were like, yes, love Cuban food, whatever. As I'm coming back, Jay had to, like, wheel me in because I was ready to snap on this lady. As I'm walking out of the bathroom, she's like, oh, are you guys still open? Can we sit down now? And I was like, this is a... It's a perfect example of a microaggression because this woman who is white automatically assumed that I worked at this Cuban restaurant because I looked Latina. That's a microaggression. And that's the kind of things that I feel like people who try to separate themselves from being a person of color or, you know, who think like, oh, I'm closer to white, so, you know, I'm good.
So how did you respond to that lady?
I just said, I gave her this evil look, and I said, I don't work here because I know Jay caught me from the corner of his eye, and he was like, no, making signs at me because I was going to snap on her. Like, right. I was ready to, like, curse her out in all sorts of, I will curse her out in Spanish and English all at the same time because it's like people don't understand, but she would have, you know, it would have gone way over her head. She would have never understood, and... You know,
that's
at
my
the
point
moment.
Of reacting yeah. to people. I've had to really look at the person in my reaction and really mm-hmm. make a decision right there. Is this person actually going to listen to
no.
my response, or is this going to go over their heads? Because then I'm not going to waste my time and
right.
just fuck it, I'll walk away.
And what would have happened was I would have been the asshole. I would have been the angry Latina because I said something, and it's
yes.
like, you could have, you know, you
this
could have
is,
been aware
right.
and noticed that, you know, not just because I'm coming around the bathroom and, you know,
right.
that I look Latina, that I work here. So, I mean, it makes my friggin' blood
no,
boil
I know,
even now.
Right.
I'm like,
My sister Moni and I, we had this discussion too last time I went mm-hmm. up to visit her in Eugene, and I told you in Eugene I had gone through my first like racist experience of this guy looking at the two of us, and we were the only brown people in the whole entire restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Starts talking about Trump and Make America Great, and people go back for where they're from. Then he starts going into the coffee shop asking for American coffee only, and then he starts naming what kind of coffee he doesn't want, from what countries he doesn't want it from. I want American coffee from USA. And in my little hometown of Texas, I can go to my local coffee shop and ask for just American coffee. In that moment, my sister was, I mean, and she lives there.
Mm-hmm.
She deals with this shit all the time on a whole different level than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those things that where I told her, here's the part that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
You react with your anger right now. All you're going to be is the loud little Mexican girl at the coffee shop
mm-hmm.
that made a big deal out of it.
Right.
No matter what.
Right.
That's the part that sucks. And when we left that day, her boyfriend was very conflicted. And when we left, we got in the truck and he started blasting ranchero Mexican music right at the very top, turns on the volume, turns it on. And then we had to make a U-turn and go by the restaurant again. And I'm in the front seat like, oh my God, what is he doing right
You're
now?
Like, what is this doing in
I was
general?
Like, what are you doing? And when we got home, my sister was so upset with her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And although he thought he was doing it from a different place, right?
Right.
And he's thinking he's kind of sticking up for us, right?
Right?
And like, you know, showing like, you know, this guy can't just say that. Like,
mm-hmm.
And I get it, what he was doing. But my sister was upset because she had to have the conversation with him as, you told me to keep my mouth shut.
Right.
But yet you were able to express your feelings
mm-hmm.
and blast that music loud. But I wasn't allowed to say anything because I'm the loud Mexican.
Right.
And you're the white boy that just got in his truck and played ranchero music.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
what are the consequences that you would have? Nothing.
Nothing.
Nobody even, they just looked at you.
Right.
But if I would have shouted out and said something in that moment,
mm-hmm. she would have been wrong.
She would have been the one in
or
the wrong.
Or perceived as the one wrong.
Right.
Right.
So that, again, it's those reactions,
yeah.
too, that we
that,
have
that,
to be
that
careful.
That takes us to a whole nother privilege conversation.
Exactly.
But,
yeah.
I know.
These things, I know. And this can go on to totally different things. And racism is something, obviously, that we can talk about on a whole nother level.
Right.
But like I said, I did want you really to share what Allie went through because
mm-hmm.
what she went through, it just made me realize, shit, we keep talking about all this racist stuff on TV and we're talking about our president being
mm-hmm.
racist, and we're talking about all these people, you know, and state assemblies and all these people and what they're doing. But we're not paying attention to what these kids are going through right now in school.
Right. And I know it sounds cliche, but these kids are the future, man. If we're teaching them from young to have these prejudices towards others, then, you know, they're going to grow up to be the racists of the future.
Right. And or they're going to be around people. You know, this is the other thing that I wanted to quickly talk about is people who surround themselves with, say they're Latinos,
mm-hmm.
but they have all their friends are white.
Mm-hmm.
So I've also experienced being in a situation where a group of white people have known give an example. A group of white people have known my in-laws for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
My in-laws are Puerto Rican.
Right.
I think because they've been friends with them, they have gotten comfortable to the point where I come in and I notice all these racist little things left and right being said in front of my in-laws and in front of me and my husband, and it's seems to be okay.
Right.
Well, no, I didn't think it was okay at all. And I started realizing how comfortable they were because they started looking at my in-laws as one of them.
Right.
Oh, you're not like the other Puerto Ricans.
Yeah.
You're not like the other Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
You're like us.
Right.
You live in a nice neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You're middle class.
Right.
My father-in-law's Navy. He's ex-Navy. He's government. Like, he's Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they think it's okay to talk a certain way. And last year, we went on a wine tasting thing with all their friends. And little to say, we weren't really invited back this year. But it was this, I was so uncomfortable. And I still don't think my in-laws realized what that scene did to me. Because I do like some of their friends.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them, I could not believe the things that they were saying in front of my in-laws. And it hurt me that my in-laws are such proud Puerto Ricans.
Right.
And not even say one word to their friends.
Mm-hmm.
It was hurtful.
Right.
It was really hurtful. So then I started noticing that more around me. I went to a high school, all white high school. My best friend, she's been really embracing her culture lately, right? She was raised in a predominantly white neighborhood.
Right.
Some of her friends have treated her a little different,
almost
to the point where I don't think they even realized their whole lives that she was actually Mexican.
Right.
I really think they saw her as the same little white girl as they were.
Yeah.
A little white cheerleader in San Carlos.
Right.
So when my friend starts doing things and becoming part of Latino organizations, going out there and doing leadership stuff.
Right. It makes them uncomfortable.
Yes. They're actually criticizing what she's doing.
Right.
And she's doing nothing but positive and good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's literally because they saw her as a little white girl.
Yeah.
And it's like all of a sudden she's Mexican and they didn't know what to do with it.
Right. It's intimidating. Like I said, being different is intimidating.
Right.
So.
But it's one of those things too. Like we all went to school together.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, back then, these things weren't so in our face either. You know, we didn't have the social media. I didn't care who the president was when I was going to school. Like, there wasn't things like that. Where now these conversations are happening at such a younger age.
Mm-hmm.
And my nephew Dexter, I had a conversation with him about President Trump. And when I asked him, how do you know these things about him?
Mm-hmm.
He said, because his friends, they talk about it in school.
Right.
He's 7 years old. And I was like, wait, you guys are having conversations at 7 years old about our president? He goes, yeah, that guy's awful. He's taken away families because they don't look white like me. He goes, they look more like you, Thea. And he's just taking them away and locking them up. And he's just like, it was just I was really taken back to know again that 7 year olds are in school talking about racism.
Yeah, they're talking about it. They're very aware of what's going on. You know, they all say they don't like the president.
Right?
Maybe they can't pinpoint it exactly why, but they know things are different too. They may not fully understand it, but they have a certain level of understanding where they just recognize things aren't right.
And that was crazy to have that conversation with my nephew. It was really crazy. And it to the point where my sister was in the room and I asked her to come out because again, I'm talking to a 7 year old. I didn't want to say anything to influence, or I don't know. I had to be cautious about what I said in front of my nephew. So my sister came out and I said, is this okay? This conversation we're having. She goes, talk to him like you're talking to any other person.
Right.
It's like, you want me to look at my 7 year old nephew and have this conversation? And we did. It was like, I'm talking to a little adult.
Right.
He had his own opinion on it.
Mm-hmm.
He had his own views. And he had reasonings of why he felt that way.
Right. That's a good start.
It really is. Because damn well at seven, I was never talking about politics.
Never. Ever, ever, ever.
It's
just, yeah.
So, I mean,
have a level of awareness that we probably didn't at our age. And, you know.
Right. I think with that level comes a responsibility to adults and the parents that are around. And I think maybe maybe these parents need to be more open to having these conversations with their kids. Yeah. Because I'm telling you right now, your kids are talking about this stuff.
They are.
They really are.
But that requires having like a certain self-awareness and like to be able to look at yourself, because I feel a lot of people just move around without, you know, they don't put themselves in certain boxes, or they don't realize that they're doing certain things because right. they're not reflecting on themselves. And that's important to look at yourself first. You know, your kids are doing certain things because, you know, they emulate everything that they see, especially at such a young age. They're mimicking everything, everything. Like my kid is a, like I said, a bag of sass, but, you know, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree.
Right? You know? Like I can second on that one.
I can't be too mad at her, you know, having smart ass responses, even though I want to choke her sometimes, you know, but I am one to have like smart ass responses all the time too. Like I'm, right. you know, quick with them, and you can't be mad at your kid. You got to try to do better yourself first so that you can show them.
Right, and so that they can repeat the cycle.
Right.
So the cycle goes on that positive, right. repetitive thing.
Exactly.
Lily, I want to thank you so much for not just coming on Soy Chingona and sharing the story, but also because you are such a badass woman that I personally look up to.
Well, thank you.
And I seriously, Lily, like you are a freaking chingona, and you have been a person in my life who has inspired me to get more educated mm-hmm. about things in our community that concern us. You are the person why I thought it was a good idea to start getting into community work mm-hmm. because I was tired of just coming to your office and getting mad about things and complaining about things. You're like, shit, go do something about it. And now I am. So, I mean, all those things that I'm really thankful for. And you really are an amazing mother who has really taken ownership of your situation, of who you are and your responsibilities. And you do it all for your daughter, and that's really beautiful.
Thank you.
It really is.
I'm gonna cry. But it's always been in you. I've always told you, you got this fire inside of you. You just need to let it out.
Right? Oh man.
You are a chingona.
It's coming out.
Sorry, Erica's hubby.
Sorry, not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
In closing, Lily, is there anything that you would like to leave our viewers with? Any advice or anything that maybe moms out there that, you know, are going through something similar that you can share with them?
I guess just always be mindful and look, watch your kids and what they're doing. And, you know, I mean, in general, like, pay attention to what's going on around you. Like, pay attention to your surroundings, because, you know, you can even yourself as an adult be, you know, overlooking certain things that could potentially, you know, be hurtful to even you or to your family or your children or those around you. Yeah, self-awareness is so important, completely important. And also, you know, like you said yourself, like, talk to the kids like they understand, and, you know, don't dismiss their feelings, don't dismiss their hopes and their dreams, you know, just talk to kids. They know what's up.
Lily, like I said, thank you again for being on the show. Thank you again for sharing all these things with me. If there is any mothers out there that are going through something similar, you know, DM me and we'll give you some insight, or you want to talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hope someone puts like a little support group, because for people that are going through this and women that are going through this mm-hmm. and stuff, because I think a lot of things that you touched on beyond, you know, just what we're mm-hmm. talking about in kids and racism is a lot of the responsibility on the parent.
Right.
And I think that's really important to call out those parents on those kind of things, because they do need to be aware of it. And just like I had the conversation with my sister, like, hey, I'm just curious, you know, your son's getting older and mm-hmm. he doesn't look Mexican. He's going to be treated like a white, privileged, entitled
mm-hmm.
man, white male. How are you going to deal with that? How are you going to instill certain things in him so that he is aware of what he
right.
represents and how to turn that into something positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that's not going to be easy, but we have to start having those conversations.
I think it all just leads back to being mindful of your situation, being mindful of who you are, being mindful of your narrative, of your place in this world, and, you know, I guess putting effort towards being who you want to be and who you want your kids to be, and you know, I want my kid to grow up being a proud Black woman. And, you know, if your sister doesn't want your nephew to grow up to be an entitled little white kid, then there's certain steps she will need to take. Just, you know, it's all about being mindful and knowing your place. But, you know,
like we said, guiding. That self-awareness is really is
critical.
Really important. Mm-hmm. So, again, Lily, thank you so much for being on my show. I really appreciate it.
I'm glad to be here anytime.
I know this is a subject that, like I said, we can go on another level, which I think I will like to have another show with you where we go on another level to this, because you and I have talked a lot about subjects. And so I would definitely love to have you come on again and go into a little deeper. In a different, you know, sense and stuff. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I appreciate you guys listening. And fist up, chingonas.
I like that.